Hi everyone, welcome to the Superhuman Switch, a mind, body, business, empowering podcast for high achievers guaranteed to switch your superhuman levels on. I'm your host, Saf. From April 1st, I will be on a silent retreat. However, I decided to share part of one of my favorite episodes. Actually, it was the first episode with Mark Colibron, a gentleman who broke his back and his life totally transformed to become a Paralympics, a gold medalist, and breaking two world records. Please enjoy this part, and if you like it, go back and check out the first episode with Mark Colibron.
The one piece of information that my dad gave me when I was a young kid, that, you know, we're only here once, you know, this is not a rehearsal. And I kept saying to my dad, what do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean by this? I don't understand what you mean, because I wasn't fully aware of the process of life, that we are born, we live, and we pass on, you know, as living sure. organisms. Mm-hmm. And my dad said to me one day, I think I was maybe 10 or 11, just be careful with your life, because, you know, my parents, as I said, thought there was something wrong with me.
That's right.
That, you know, just respect that you only have one life, one chance mm-hmm. to live out this incredible journey. Because remember that one day in the future, tomorrow will be your last day. And I remember sitting there thinking, what does he mean by that?
Yeah.
And then he explained about obviously how we pass on. And that gave me, I think, the kick up the backside, you know, to use a Welsh term for your audience. The realization that this journey that we're on, you know, that famous clock, you know, tick, 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 you know, is very short-lived, actually, you know. So the appreciation, the gratitude, and just having the love for life, you know, at a young age, you know, at a very young age. You know.
That's true. I love this, actually. It's quite interesting to reflect on. But the thing that it's really drove my attention, of course, with the uprising, and you've been active all the time, and you practice different sports. What's the drive that took you to the paragliding?
So if I take the audience back to 1990, you know, when I was 21 years of age, I was working in South Wales, mm-hmm. you know, I fell in love, you know, with which was then, became my girlfriend, became my fiance, and then my wife,
okay.
you know. So I think all through that journey, I felt confident enough at the age of 21, you know, which in today's numbers is pretty young
yeah.
to get married, you know.
That's true.
But I was working, I was confident, so we got married, we bought a house. And then 4 years later, you know, my daughter Jessica, you know, arrived. So the family circle felt complete.
Amazing.
And what that gave me was the peace of mind then to have security in my work, certainty in my family,
mm-hmm.
and peace of mind to have unconditional love within the family, if that makes sense.
Makes sense, yeah.
And I continued, you know, I continued my sport, you know, my cycling. That then led me into triathlon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I became a big advocate of triathlon. So that took me all through the 90s,
mm.
you know, and then into the 2000s, I started rock climbing. You know, I became a big fan of rock climbing
yeah.
because it's so challenging. It's just you and the rock. That's it.
It's mental.
It can be, especially when you start climbing some really, really difficult climbs.
Yeah.
And then in 2006, my wife and I unfortunately grew apart, as people do. People change.
Yeah.
Life changes, you know, because as you know yourself, when you came to the presentation, the explanation of change is that it will always happen. Change
True.
Will always happen.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, take the listeners back to 65 million years ago when the asteroid hit the Earth. And wiped out the dinosaurs, you know. So it will always happen. We don't like change as human beings, but we are actually designed perfect for change.
I love it.
We are, you know.
And but we discussed this point, and I love the fact that you have built your values based on the change. So it would be really interesting just to share with us how you design this values, because I think most of us these days, we take actions and we live our life without basically designing the principles and the values. So if you can take us through the values and how the change element is embedded with it.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I think if you evaluate your individual personality, every human being, that's ingrained into us by the time we are 7, nearly 8 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else thereafter then is just experiences, okay? But we have this personality that we keep with us, you know, all through our life.
Yeah.
So when we rebranded, you know, my business to bring me to Dubai, you know, this year in 2022, I evaluated quite deeply on who I was as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's really important to me and how can I add value to other people? So then we went through the list of values, and there was probably in excess of 20 different values.
Mm-hmm.
But which ones were the most important? And what shows up every day, naturally, without having to push the boundary or push the envelope.
Yeah, you know? Put the effort in life.
It's natural, mm-hmm. you know. So the analogy of change starts with the letter C,
mm-hmm.
courageous. I feel I'm a courageous person. I've been that way all my life.
Mm-hmm.
H, honest. In other words, honesty, showing up with honesty. Some people cross-reference it with integrity, of course. And then for me, it's being accountable. So if I said to you, as I did today, I'm going to turn up at this time, my integrity and my commitment is to turn up on time.
Actually, you turned up 20 minutes before, which is amazing.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. I'm just allowing for the Dubai traffic, you know. So then you have N, okay, for nurturing. I love helping people. And I'll share this with your audience very quickly. The town that I grew up in South Wales is called Tredegar, okay, or Tredegar. But Tredegar has a very famous person who actually formulated and founded the NHS, mm-hmm. the National Health Service, in the UK. A wonderful Labour politician who became the health minister called Aneurin Bevan.
Yeah.
Okay. He was from my town. No, not my town. I don't own the town, but you know what I mean. And he wanted to help the UK. Okay, to transfer the, you know, the service that he'd almost, mm-hmm. you know, invented himself. Okay.
Yeah.
I've had that feeling all my life to help people. It's just in my DNA.
Amazing. Okay.
So to help people through nurturing, through the holistic approach, okay, is really important to me.
Yeah.
Okay. So then if you then evaluate my personal, you know, my personal values, okay. It's something that I truly enjoy sharing with other people, mm-hmm. because it's worked.
Yeah.
It's worked for me, you know? So through all of the evaluations that's now helped me to share these, that's what's brought me to Dubai, you know? And then obviously, you know, the two final letters for me is how I show my genuine side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I am just a genuine, true human being. I'm a normal guy.
Yeah.
I was born Margaret's boy. I was. I wasn't born a world or Paralympic champion. I wasn't. I was born Margaret's boy, yeah. You know. So the genuine side of me is the G. And then the final letter, which is E, is encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Because my parents always encouraged me to do what I thought may be good for me.
True.
I didn't know. But as you saw when you came to the event,
mm-hmm.
the famous quote by Michael Jordan, it's okay to fail.
That's true.
Everybody fails at something.
Yeah.
But what's not okay is not trying. And that gave me the opportunity to almost live out the concept of what my late father had shared with me as a child, that the process of life, which we've just spoke about, is actually very short-lived in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
However, what we work for, physically work for, is not what we take with us, okay? So the house, the car, the shoes, the watch, the holiday home, whatever you work for. And you know, I commend people for working for those things. But what we do take with us is the feelings, emotions, friendships, experiences in life. That's what we take with us when we pass on.
Mm-hmm.
So everything else, we hand back. Technically, we only borrow them. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. Yeah.
So when I moved to Cardiff, that gave me the opportunity to have all of these new experiences. I was like a child in a sweet shop. Literally all of these experiences, which then led me to qualify as a paragliding pilot into 2008 at that point. And I loved it. I mean, I absolutely loved the feeling of flight. When your feet leave the floor and you get that Peter Pan moment for the listeners, for the audience who's watching this and listening to the podcast, it was just an incredible cathartical feeling, okay? And I couldn't get enough of it, okay? I'm not going to use the A word, but I became very passionate about flight, the feeling of flight, and just wanted it every weekend. You know, I looked forward to the Friday, to know then that on the Saturday and the Sunday I could go flying with the club that I was part of.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward and take the audience back. So it was May 2009, so just over 13 years ago. And the club that I was part of, we had arranged as a club, and there was about 21 pilots, to fly over the Gower Peninsula, which is in South Wales, just on the outskirts of Swansea. And it's the coastline of, southwest Wales. So the conditions were recorded to be perfect. And what I mean by that is 20 degrees temperature, 12, maybe 13 mile an hour headwind coming in off the sea, which was almost perfect for flight, you know, for that weekend. So we all arrived on the Saturday morning, just a normal sunny Saturday morning, you know. So we'd had a number of hours of flight through the Saturday, through the day. And then at around 5 p.m., we just sat on the hillside, just having a coffee, just having a chat, talking about the day and the weekend, because we'd planned to be there for 2 days. And one of the guys, I won't mention his name, but one of the guys said to me, "Shall we go back up? Because we've probably got maybe about an hour left before the sun sets, the wind drops, the wind, you know, sort of dissipates."
We always have this friend that, okay, let's do it one more time.
But in the grand scheme of things, 99 times out of 100, nothing goes wrong.
True.
Okay, nothing goes wrong. So I said to this guy, "Okay, let's go back up," you know. So anyway, put the harnesses on, launched the canopy off the side of the hillside, you know, with the paragliding flight. And about 15 minutes later, I'm flying across the top ridge, maybe about 15 meters above the floor, just enjoying the moment, you know. And as I pulled on my left brake, just to turn the canopy, you know, at sort of 90 degrees to face the Irish Sea, I flew into what they call a crosswind, or what is known as a crosswind. So it's two air streams that fight for the same space, basically. Okay. So you can't see it, you can't feel it, you can't touch it, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And if any of your audience has ever driven over black ice, you know, if anybody has ever driven over, you know, solid ice, not knowing it's there until you drive over it, and then you lose control of the steering wheel, for instance. It was just an incredible shock, you know, to me straight away. And as I flew into it, my whole canopy, the whole paragliding canopy, just collapsed, you know, just this. And I can still close my eyes and hear the noise, you know, the whoosh. Next thing, I'm looking down at the grass, and the grass is coming up at a rate of knots. And within 2 seconds, and I can still hear the noise now of my boots, you know, my flying boots hitting the floor, thud. Now, I was fully conscious at this point, so I've hit the floor, not knowing what I've done. And then the canopy, because the wind was swirling, the canopy reinflated.
Oh.
Well, I'm still attached with my harness. And I got dragged probably for about 100 meters or so, uncontrollably, fully conscious. And I can, I can not laugh about it now, but I can still think of the process of just seeing the sky, the grass, the sky, the grass, the sky, the grass, until it finally stopped. You know, I stopped tumbling, being dragged. And it was like being a rag doll in a washing machine. It was horrendous. Wow. So I'm lying on the floor, And I'm staring up at the blue sky, and I'll never forget the beautiful blue sky that afternoon. No clouds, just beautiful, light blue colour. And I'm catching my breath. I'm just like... And I thought to myself, that was close. Because wow. I'm in no pain at this point. This is crazy. That was really close.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, well, I'll just sit up. I'll pull in the lines, you know, the paragliding lines, and I'll repack my canopy and I'll walk back to the, you know, to the launch site.
Mm-hmm.
And as I tried to lift my shoulders off the floor, I thought, that's interesting. I can't lift my shoulders, so I must be caught on something. My flight jacket must be caught on bracken or something, you know. And it was like being Velcroed to the floor. That's the only way I can explain it. And I thought, what's going on here? And I looked down my body at both of my legs, which was severely twisted, you know, like two pipe cleaners. And I thought, oh dear, I think I've done something pretty serious here, because my legs are just mangled.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, it looks like I've broke both my legs. That was the only vision I had, okay? Now, one of the other paragliding pilots who saw me crash, he looped down as quick as he possibly could from about 300 feet down, you know, onto the grass. He landed safely. He unclipped, you know, his paragliding canopy, and he ran over as quick as he possibly could. And he stood by my side, and I'll never forget this guy staring down at me. And he says to me, oh my gosh, are you still alive?
Wow.
I said, yes, but I can't feel my legs. There's no movement, there's no feeling.
And yeah, the brain did not register yet.
Nothing, mm-hmm. Zero, just a state of calmness, actually.
Wow.
You know? And he said, don't move. I said, I can't. I can't, I physically can't move, because I tried to put myself into the recovery position just in case I passed out, and I vomited, you know, which is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. It's trauma.
So he radioed for the Wales Air Ambulance, which is a charity in Wales, and they have helicopters, you know, that treat, you know, patients in all environments. Could be in the mountains, could be a car crash, could be a house fire, whatever.
Yeah. You know?
And they arrive within probably 10 or 11 minutes from literally, you know, 100 miles away. And I'll never forget lying on the floor, and I could just feel my body getting cold because of the shock. You know, mm-hmm. The blood is obviously going to the damaged area now. So this gentleman put his jacket over me just to keep me, you know, warm, even in the beautiful warm sun. And then I could hear the tuk, 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 which is the helicopter coming in, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, great. I'm in good hands now, mm-hmm. You know. So the Wales Air Ambulance, you know, they stabilized me with morphine. You know, they put the neck collar on me and a chest brace. Yeah. And then obviously carefully, because they didn't know what I'd done at this point, even though they checked me over. But they knew I'd done something pretty serious.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they lifted me onto the spinal board.
Yeah.
You know, very, very carefully. And then I got airlifted off, you know, to hospital. To then arrive in hospital, have the MRI, have the x-rays, and then to be told that evening, you know, that I'd broken my back. Wow. And I remember saying to the doctor, can you just say that one more time? Because it just wasn't registering.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And he said, you've broken your back. You've broken T12, which is the vertebrae around belly button, mm-hmm. You know, your belly button level. And you've got a huge thoracic fracture. When you hit the floor, basically the compression, you know, when you hit the floor, your whole body compressed and T12 just cracked.
Snapped. Just the cracked. The whole spine.
Just cracked.
Wow.
So thankfully, I didn't have any severe spinal cord damage. In other words, the spinal cord wasn't, you know, severed. But all of the fragments from the vertebrae, you know, when it broke, it cut into, you know, very slightly cut into the nerves around the vertebrae, which basically has now left me, you know, with lower leg paralysis. So technically only half of the muscles in my legs work,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I suppose, in reality was the end of my life as I knew it.
Yeah.
but technically it was probably the start of a new life.
Thanks everyone for tuning in. Follow us, rate, review. We are on your favorite podcast app and on YouTube channel. Superhuman Switch, get your switch on.